Our case this afternoon is 10-3460, Adventist Glen Oaks Hospital versus Sebelius. Mr. Barber.
May it please the court. My name is Keith Barber, and I represent the appellant hospitals in this case. This case comes to this court through the Medicare administrative appeal process. At issue before the court is whether or not, when calculating the hospital wage index, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services must treat lunch periods, time spent when employees are eating their lunch, in a similar fashion. Right now, the Secretary is allowing different treatment of these hours based on how they're initially reported by hospitals. At this time,
Mr. Barber, I'd like to ask you this question. I throw this out for your comment along the line. After studying this matter, I think that the basic formula is incorrect in including paid hours instead of worked hours. I gather that's been before some the administrators a couple of times, but it's not before us now because you've withdrawn it or repudiated it, I think. On that basis, I think that the formula is basically wrong in that respect. So I guess I could see going along with your bottom line. Your arithmetic, I think, is okay because you're just manipulating paid hours instead of substituting the worked hours. It seems to me the purpose of the formula is to determine a wage level. A wage level in a smaller region compared to the national. And if you're gonna, I don't know what a wage level is, but I think it's the money that's paid for a unit of work. And here a unit of work is an hour, as far as I can make out. So that seems to me a fairly simple, logical.
It is logical.
But it hasn't been litigated here.
No.
I don't know what the arguments are for and against it.
Various aspects of it have
been. What am I going to do with that situation?
Various aspects of it have been litigated, Your Honor. For example, in the Via Health case involving Rochester General Hospital and what were referred to there as short-term disability hours. The position that the Secretary should only count worked hours is certainly a reasonable one. But I think that we would tell you that it's not necessarily commanded by the statute. We believe that what is commanded by the statute is consistency in the measurement of hours.
So well, it's got to be logical, too. I mean, your process followed has got to be logical.
Your Honor, I...
The only thing I've heard about it has been... It's been the rule for many years. It's been there a long time.
That's true, Your Honor, and that is indeed the Secretary's primary argument, is that's the way I wrote the rule. My view is that Your Honor's position that just counting worked hours is defensible, logical, that it would make sense, and that would result in a more uniform and accurate wage index. However, in terms of what we believe the statute commands, we won't go quite that far. We're willing to grant the Secretary greater discretion than that. And we're willing to say that so long as the Secretary counts similar hours and similar costs in a similar manner for all hospitals, so that you're matching apples and apples. And
well, admittedly, you get the right arithmetic that way. But it doesn't seem to me that it's makes any sense.
Going back to the statute, the statutory command is that the differences in regional wage costs be reflected in the wage index calculation. And we agree that that affords the Secretary considerable discretion in doing that. But what it does not afford the Secretary discretion to do is to count hours, whether they're lunch hours or short-term disability hours, as in the Rochester case, or costs associated with FICA taxes in the Sarasota case, it doesn't allow you to count those hours or costs one way at one hospital and another way at another hospital, which seems undoubtedly most illogical, I hope, to this court, is that lunch hours are counted at some hospitals and not counted at other hospitals.
Well, the rules are different. Why shouldn't they be different?
I don't understand your question, Your Honor.
Some of the hospitals are providing for a non-work lunch, and some are not. So I don't see why they can't have different accounting.
They
can't. I don't think there's an accounting problem.
They can, Your Honor. Just as in Sarasota, you know, the hospital in Sarasota really did pay for its employees' FICA taxes, unlike most hospitals do. The fact that they did that did not alter the 11th Circuit's opinion that similar costs in that case had to be treated in a similar fashion. And that's our point in this case, too. What the employees do over lunch is the same at all the hospitals. They take the half hour off. They go eat. They relax. There's no difference in this whatsoever. If you took the example that appears on page 12 of our initial brief and extrapolated that up and ballooned that up to two hospitals that were in separate MSAs and each had 100 employees identical to the ones described in that example, nothing different would be really going on between those two hospitals except for how they accounted for their lunch hours. But under the approach advocated by the Secretary, the hospital that counted its lunch hours as paid hours would get paid 6 2/3% less for every inpatient service it provided, even though they are otherwise identical.
Are you saying that a non-working lunch is really a working lunch?
I am saying that a lunch hour is a lunch. What the employees are doing are the same at every hospital, Your Honor, and that they should be treated as the same by CMS. A FICA charge by the IRS is a FICA charge by the IRS, as exemplified in the Sarasota case, whether it's paid for by the hospital or it's paid for by the employee. And the fact that the hospital handled them different or initially reported these things different is irrelevant. The Rochester General Hospital in the Via Health case really did do something different, Your Honor. They really did pay for their short-term disability to their employees directly out of their payroll rather through premiums to an insurance company.
The Via Health case has no persuasive value. First of all, it's an unpublished district court opinion, and second, it was vacated. So I don't think we ought to be relying on that case.
Well, take the case for whatever this court feels that it's worth.
I'm suggesting it's worth zero since it was vacated.
All right. We believe that the reasoning of Judge Talaska in that case, Your Honor, speaks for itself.
We can't very well rely on a vacated decision whether its reasoning is rock solid or not. So,
and if the court feels that way about it, then I would refer to the court to the cases that...
It's not a matter of how I feel about it, counsel. It's just, you know, it is what it is. It's a vacated district court opinion, meaning it has no force whatsoever.
I respect the court's feelings on that, your feelings on that. I would refer you to the cases then that Via Health relied upon, to the Sarasota case, the Central case.
Let me ask you this, counsel. The department apparently proposed the change to the formula that you are advocating here in 2003, I think it was, or maybe 2002.
Yes.
And got incredible pushback on it. And most of the stakeholders opposed that method of dealing with paid and unpaid lunch hours.
Yes, Your Honor. The record does clearly show that the Secretary did consider this issue and weighed it. and published in the Federal Register a proposal to change the way that this might be done and invited industry comment on that. Now, as to what the comment from the industry actually says, that's not really in the record. What is in the record is the Secretary's summation of what the industry said. And without the context of those actual comments, it's difficult to know if hospitals were really saying that the Secretary should not measure lunch hours consistently. What the question was whether or not lunch hours should be removed from the wage index. It may well have been that many of those comments suggested that they be included for everyone or excluded for everyone. But another thing I would like to point out is that there are winners or losers here. Because the wage index is ultimately a revenue neutral, you know, zero-sum game, hospitals that are in metropolitan statistical areas where none of the hospitals, report their wage or their lunch hours, those hospitals win. So hospitals with a stake in maintaining the status quo, who are coming out ahead in that regards, may well comment in a way suggested by the Secretary.
What's the point of this accounting treatment of lunch hours, those hospitals that count it as paid?
It depends upon the hospital, Your Honor. It's a variety of things. You know, you might as well have asked what would have been the point of Sarasota in that case, of it paying the FICA tax of its employees. Well,
that's a net benefit to the employees. Counting a half-an-hour lunch as paid when the daily wage rate doesn't change is a wash, right?
Some of it is simply archaic payroll systems.
And within the power of the hospitals to change if they so choose?
In at least some cases, the payroll system is developed without that in mind. Without the hospital system in mind, because there's so many county hospitals, for example. Let me put it to you this way, Your Honor. Suppose we wanted to determine what two people weighed, and we wanted to find out what their relative weights were to each other, whether or not one was heavier than the other. And so we asked them to weigh themselves and to report their total weight. And one person reported a weight of 155, and one person reported a weight of 150. So we'd conclude that one weighed more than the other. Well, what if we subsequently discover that the person who weighed 155 weighed themselves with their clothes on, while the other person weighed himself with his clothes off? Is it now safe to say that one person weighed more than the other? And the fact that one of the people chose to weigh himself with clothes on, is that really relevant to our analysis? And relevant to answering the question of whether or not one weighs more than the other? We have a law that says that the wage index must reflect real differences in wage costs between geographic regions. And when you hold...
You're overreading the statute. It doesn't require that degree of perfection.
Well, I would suggest that as interpreted by the 11th Circuit in Sarasota, by the court in Centra, and in other cases, it requires a uniform and consistent measurement of the wage data. I don't know whether the government agrees with that or not. Their briefs don't seem to take objection to that notice, though they challenge the cases that we use to cite for the proposition that a uniform and consistent measurement of wage data.
Where do you find this uniformity requirement in the statute?
The Secretary was required to establish a wage index to create a uniform picture of what wage levels were. That was from both the Centra Health and Sarasota cases.
Yeah, that's judicial gloss. I'm looking at the language of the statute. That's where we usually start.
Well, the mandate of the statute is that the Secretary shall adjust costs which are attributable to wage-related costs for area differences in hospital wage levels. And here's the critical part, reflecting the relative wage level in the geographic area of the hospital compared to the national average hospital wage level.
Right. That doesn't imply any degree of uniformity of calculation or otherwise. It's a very generalized standard vesting the secretary with substantial discretion.
I would agree that it gives the secretary substantial discretion. But if you don't measure apples to apples and oranges to oranges, if you don't have a consistent and uniform measure of the data that is used to determine a hospital's wage index, then you simply cannot have that wage index reflect the wage level in that geographic area as compared to the national average. And I'm not making that up. That was the decision of the court in Sarasota and in the Centra case. I'm not aware of any courts that disagree with that. I'm not aware even that the secretary disagrees with that.
I'm questioning whether that's a proper interpretation of the statutory command. The statutory command is very general. It doesn't require uniformity of inputs, and it seems to me that in this area, uniformity of inputs is impossible to achieve because every hospital has different accounting systems. And so, a more generalized approach that admits of some differences in the inputs is going to be perfectly reasonable, and our standard of review is incredibly high.
Yes.
If it's reasonable, then it's okay.
Yes, it is, and it was the same standardized standard of review that was in the Sarasota case and in the Centra case.
There wasn't a whole lot of deference paid. There was a lot of invocation of the standard of review, but when you read those decisions, you don't get a sense that the courts were actually deferring.
With all due respect, I believe that the courts were appropriately deferential in light of the language of a statute which does mandate that the differences in the wage index reflect differences in wage costs. And truly, Your Honor, we all understand.
That's against the national.
Truly, we all understand the principle of garbage in and garbage out. And the fact that perfect uniformity may not exist in the real world doesn't mean that the secretary can justify excluding entire classes of hours that grossly distort the wage index by, nearly 7%, which is well above the operating margins of most hospitals. This is not as difficult, I think, as the secretary might make it out to be.
Apparently the national hospital community disagrees with that because they didn't want the change in the rule.
Once again, there's some winners and losers in that regards, Your Honor, but I would also say that regardless of what the hospital community said, the mandate for the secretary here is to follow the law.
Time has expired.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Wanless?
May it please the court, counsel. I'd like to initially address some of the hospital's counsel's comments. The first thing I'd like to address is that, in fact, the secretary does have the statute delegated to the secretary the authority to construct the wage index. And as long as her construct is rational and related to the statute, then it deserves deference.
I think the statute repeals the laws of logic, though. This is just a simple exercise in logic, it seems to me.
Well, Your Honor, you may be right. There may be different and better ways of constructing the wage index, but the secretary has chosen to use total paid hours, including paid meal periods, to do that.
Tell me if you agree or disagree with this. If you give somebody time, non-working time, and pay them for it, you have increased the wage level, have you not? That's all I'm saying here.
That total wage costs encompass both hours that are actually worked as well as...
Now, wage costs are wages. They're money.
Yes.
All right. If you pay the same money for less work, you have increased the rate of pay, it seems to me. That same thing.
Well, I think, Your Honor, that people are often accorded compensated time off as a part of their employment. So I think that's incorporated in their wage rate already.
Well, they're getting more money for less work. I'm just saying that's an increase in the compensation level. Let's call it that.
Well, nonetheless, this is what the Secretary has chosen to do, to use total paid hours.
Well, the only thing I've read is where they say, oh, yeah, we never did anything different. So that's set in stone. I think it's interesting that when you read the record of the proceedings here in the administrative side, that all the members of the commission who were considering this case, they all asked the witness for the hospital. They said, "Well, what do you think about this using paid hours instead of work hours?" And he rather carefully maneuvered so he didn't have to answer the question, if you read the transcript. But everybody seems to be interested in that question, but very little was ever said about it.
Well, again, Your Honor, I believe the Secretary uses total paid hours because it's her belief that more accurately measures total wage costs in that it includes both hours worked and paid leave periods.
What is a wage cost by your lights?
It would be the total salary that the employee receives, as well as probably some additional sorts of compensation. And that compensation would include the paid leave period, so
for
holidays,
what?
Vacations.
For what? It's per work delivered, is it not? Per units of work. The units of work are hours of work.
Well, that's certainly...
I don't see how you can escape that logical conclusion.
That's certainly one way of looking at it, Your Honor.
Maybe the Secretary has the right to ignore logic, but I haven't heard that very often.
I'd also like to address the Sarasota case that counsel referred to. That case actually... concerned wage costs and not total paid hours. As counsel said, that included FICA payments that the hospital made directly on behalf of the employees rather than giving it to the employees and their salary and then having the employees pay that. And the court held that the Secretary could not treat like costs in a dissimilar manner. We're not talking about like costs in this case. What we're talking about here is the fact that some of these hospitals actually compensate their employees for paid meal periods, and other hospitals do not. So that under the Secretary's unvarying rule, if you pay for time, it has to be included in paid hours, and that would include a paid meal period. Conversely, if it's not paid, it's not included in that. The other case that counsel referred to was the Centra case. That case concerned which hospital's data should be included in the wage index in order to calculate the wage index for Lynchburg, Virginia. And the issue there was that one of the hospitals included had a great number of nursing home beds, predominantly nursing home beds, and actually under the statute, nursing homes are not supposed to be included when calculating the wage index. In addition, so the court found that, in fact, that hospital should not have been included, and in addition, the Secretary had changed her position on that. Some years she included the hospital with the predominant nursing home beds, and in others she didn't. And that is certainly distinguishable from this case, in which the Secretary has consistently used total paid hours to calculate the wage index.
Could I ask a question, just by comparison? When someone, a lot of times hospitals work 24 hours, so there's going to be, but I think each of them call it lunch when they're in the middle of the night or something else. But if someone works 8 hours, or they're there 8 hours or whatever you want to call it working, and they have this lunch break, they get paid, I assume, on an 8-hour day, don't they? Or do they get paid by the hour and only work 37 and a half hours?
I think that's one of the issues in this case, Your Honor. Some, I think there are a great number of hourly employees in hospitals, And so a number of hospitals, for example, will pay for 7.5 hours, even though the employee is required to be there 8 hours, because they're getting then a half an hour meal period break. Other hospitals pay their employees for that entire period, 8 hours, if you will, but they still get a meal break during which they don't have to work.
Well, theoretically, just for comparison, they get paid the same at the end of the week.
Well, Your Honor, certainly that's counsel's example, but I don't think there's any evidence in the record to that effect.
Well, I know you get into other things like overtime. If they only work 37.5 hours, if they work 2.5 more hours, they still don't get overtime, I guess.
Right. Whereas if you were paying the lunch hour, then you would get up to the and that was all considered 40 hours. You get up to the overtime much faster. Well, 2.5 hours.
But see, I mean, that's a variable, and that's why I look at this kind of clutter. And I honestly, I don't know how to run many things, including a hospital, and who pays what and how much. But it just seems that this formula does impact some negatively when perhaps it shouldn't. But I don't have the solution. So I guess a lot of people comment about various solutions, and everybody's looking out for their own pocketbook, and that's why there's disagreement.
Well, just to return for a moment, Your Honor, to the example and whether it all is the same at the end of the day, I don't think there is no evidence in the record to that effect. There is certainly the hospital's illustration, you know, which assumes that everyone makes the same daily wage rate, whether they get paid a meal period or not, but there's no evidence in the record that all the nurses in the Chicago area make the same daily wage rate, or all the physical therapists in Rhode Island make the same daily wage rate, or all the medical social workers in Kentucky
You've got seniority, you have levels of everything. I know there are many variables with each person, so it isn't a flat. I was just trying to put two people in the same position in the same work level and whatever to see if there is some way to equate, and maybe there isn't.
I don't think there is, Your Honor. I think that if a hospital compensates a meal period, they're going to do that for a business reason. It just doesn't make any good business sense to pay for that additional time unless there's some reason, like labor market advantage, that the hospital would need to. And I think there's an example of that in this case. One of the Rhode Island hospitals only paid a lunch period during the third shift, which is, of course, the overnight shift. Why weren't they paying it during the first shift and the second shift? Well, certainly one can theorize that it's because it's harder to get employees to work the overnight shift, and if you add that paid meal period, that's going to make somebody say, okay, it's worth it for me to do this because I'm going
to
be getting
more overnight. They had to pay somebody more to work at night. And, same with an ER, a lot of other places. There's some hospitals that aren't desirable, and you may have to pay them more. So I don't know how to run this, except.
Are you arguing that because they provide this benefit, that they probably also get it, they give it with the right hand and take it back with the left? Is that may be the course of labor negotiations on occasion. But I'm not sure we can assume that it's true in this case.
Right. We don't know for sure why they're offering this meal period in the third shift, but certainly that would be one of the reasons. I think it's interesting, though, that this example that the hospital used, assuming that everyone gets paid the same at the end of the day, it's actually based on a discussion that was included in a letter Blue Cross Blue Shield wrote to the head of the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services in response to the proposal that the meal periods be excluded. In fact, that letter was opposing the proposal to exclude the paid meal periods, and you can find that entire letter starting at page 38 on the hospital's appendix. And really, the point of the discussion of assuming this same daily, of their whole discussion of this example, was to point out that if you delete a meal period, a paid meal period, you're going to cause wages to rise, you know, the hourly rate will rise without the raises, the rate actually really increasing. And so, again, it was opposing that proposal. And although the hospitals apparently take issue with the Secretary's characterization of the comments that she received. There's certainly nothing in the record to suggest that she mischaracterized any of the comments that she received.
Well, do you think if you get a non-working lunch hour that increases the wage cost of the employer? Wage cost is a cost to the employer, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
If you make this concession and you tell the employees you don't have to work during this period, does that increase your wage costs?
If you're paying them, I'm assuming that it might increase your wage cost. I think it would also depend on the hourly rate that you're paying your employees.
Why? What's that got to do with it?
Well,
I'm saying that all other things being equal, I'm just talking about this particular concession.
Paying them the meal period.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you didn't have to pay it and you're paying the same hourly rate, yes, your wage costs would probably go up. But again,
well,
I think
it isn't in this case. That's the problem.
Well, if that's an example,
that's the basic problem here.
Again, I don't think there's anything in the record to suggest that there's any evidence that there's a factual basis for that example. The final point that I'd like to make is that these hospitals actually did pay these employees meal periods. It is not due to some archaic payroll system or merely being initially recording. There is evidence, substantial evidence in the record, as the district court found, that the hospitals compensated the meal periods. During the PRRB hearing, the hospital's expert actually conceded that all five hospitals paid their employees meal periods. And in a separate statement during that same hearing, he confirmed that Stroger Hospital paid its employees meal periods. The other four hospitals, Landmark, St. Joseph, Westerly, and Sampson, acknowledged that they paid their employees meal periods in the request that they submitted during the wage correction process, asking that those meal periods be deleted from their total paid hours. Because the Secretary's longstanding practice of using total paid hours to calculate the wage index is not arbitrary and capricious, and because there's substantial evidence in the record that supports her decision to include those paid meal periods in total paid hours, we ask this court to affirm the decision of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Barber, your time had expired, but I'll give you a minute to respond if you have any rebuttal left.
Thank you, Your Honor. I will try and keep it very brief.
Just very quickly in rebuttal, Your Honor. What they described as the hospital's illustration isn't really the hospital's illustration. That's the illustration of Blue Cross Blue Shield, the Secretary's contractor in this, and that's in the record. We simply put it in a chart form to make it easier to read, and that contractor was concerned that the treatment of lunch hours at issue could create the kind of distortion that has brought us before this court today. Their distinction of Sarasota, that it's about costs and not about hours. Well, in the wage index calculation, total cost goes in the numerator, and total paid hours goes in the denominator. And if you're going to get an accurate answer at the other end of that, you're going to need to have consistent data for both the numerator and the denominator to get an accurate result. And we just don't see how that distinction that it was costs and not hours is meaningful to the analysis. And with that, I will simply conclude by saying what we are asking for is the consistent treatment of lunch hours between all hospitals, as Sarasota demanded similar treatment of costs between all hospitals. And that's a whole class of hours, and we honestly don't care how the Secretary does it, as long as they treat all hospitals the same. And with that, I'll sit down. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will be in recess until tomorrow morning.